that? Did it work?
I think it worked.
Cameron, I want to tell you a story. I learned the other day that there's a band called Meat Shits. And I've never heard this band. I don't even know if I care that they exist. However, I like that there's a band with a name so stupid and vulgar, it's just Meat Shits. And then the E is spelled backwards on their logo. And there's just something kind of charming about things that are so stupidly vulgar for no reason. Yeah, this is grindcore. I kind of like it. It's groovy. Oh, I don't actually know if this is grindcore. This just feels like really weird death metal. Okay, that's enough of that. 38 seconds is more than anybody needs of Meat Shits. But
I like how they incorporate in the easy to understand words, like the sound clips.
Yeah. Honestly, I was kind of surprised he was just doing a standard, like, false chord, breathy, like, kind of old school death metal sound. I was expecting something a lot more inarticulate and extreme and upsetting. And it's like, oh, no, this is just, like, an old school sounding death metal band that's a little faster. But it's funny. Like, imagine like, getting your friends together, like, hey, guys, let's start a band and call it Meat Shits. Like, doesn't that sound fun?
Yeah. And, I mean... My coworker, shoot, I wish I could remember the name, but it was very, very stupid along the line of Meat Shits. But he sent me a band, and the music video was literally just them out in the woods and, like, trying to record a music video.
I like that.
And it was, like, it was them playing with foam axes and, like the guy with the camera kind of trying to light a firecracker behind the guy playing the guitar. And then run around to the front real fast before it blows so he can, like, get a cool shot of smoke shooting up behind the guy with the guitar. And it's just, it's a very cute music video because it just kind of sounds like a amateur garage band in a very fun way where it's, like, it's almost relatable, I guess.
Sure. I like that. I think, like, there's a time and place for the really epic, crazy, well-produced music and music videos, and then there's such a wonderful I can do that too charm to that kind of stuff, or what I just made you listen to for 30 seconds that I also like. Band I really like, Winter Sun, they're doing an Indiegogo campaign for their Time 2 album, which is done. A lot of weird money politics involved in that. But one of the things that you get with your $50 Indiegogo submission is a bunch of his old demos and songs he was working on when he was in other bands. And he's released a couple of clips of those so you get, like, an idea of what they sound like. And the answer is kind of, like, it's, like, old school death metal shitty a bit. Like, he's using a drum machine. He's recording on stuff that, you know, he had available in the 90s when he was a teenager. But there's a vibe to it that is really special that you don't get anymore because everything's so crystal clean. And I kind of appreciate that vibe. Like, we've talked about this before, but there can be an artistry and a specialness to, like, kind of sounding shitty or looking shitty or whatever. And the better technology gets and the higher, like, standards get for just stuff, I feel like there's less of that unpolished goodness that shows up, and it's a little bit of a disappointment.
I was thinking about I told you how on a Rock Band Fortnite mode they have all these, like, fun pop songs or whatever, and it's not Guitar Hero. Like, I remember early Guitar Hero had these, like, really good, you know, just classic rock songs, and doing the more modern contemporary pop stuff, it's interesting how the gameplay is almost more boring because everything is, like, patterned out so evenly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's the same way that, like, the songs are actually made, where just kind of, like, everything's loops.
Yeah.
So there are some songs where I like them, but I have to play on vocals.
Okay.
And then I'll have a daily quest where it's like, you have to, you know, get so many points on bass. And so it's like, okay, you know what? I'll pick bass today. And then I'll remember, oh, yeah, I just push these three buttons in this exact same pattern the entire song.
Sure. On expert.
And it's like, yeah, this isn't engaging. It's missing that craftsmanship.
Yeah, and
it might sound nice, but there's a quality difference.
I've
there's a texture difference.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I've put songs into, you know, I've brought them into FL Studio to mess with them, like just random songs, either because I want to use them as a reference track or because I want to actually like play with them or figure out maybe what they're doing. And you bring in like an older song and you set it to the BPM and it shifts as it goes on and off because they were playing maybe to a metronome, but they weren't like, they had to play the whole song kind of in one or two takes and get it right versus playing 20 seconds, it's perfect. The next 20 seconds is perfect. The next 20 seconds until it's perfect. And everything is so time aligned. Like you bring in a Taylor Swift song and everything is perfect on the grid, but you bring in something by like ABBA and it's kind of all over the place, but it has an energy to it because it shifts around. And the problem with being a digital musician that I am is that it's actually harder for me to be off grid. Like the program doesn't want you to be off grid. It wants you to be on grid. And so if I want to have that kind of natural sounding energy, I literally have to do more work for it, which I don't do because it sucks and I don't want to do more work. And that's like true for everybody. You bring in any modern ass pop song or rap song and put it in, it's all digital. And so it's all perfect. And then you bring these older songs in, you're like, man, why don't songs have like the vibe that they used to in like the 80s and the 90s and the 70s? And it's like, well, it's because they had to make do with what they had, and they literally didn't have access to perfection that we have now.
I want a karaoke version of a song, and I cannot find it.
I can make it for you.
Well, I don't know if you can because it's so messy. The backup vocals make it so complicated that I don't know that it. I think it might be more work than it's worth, so I don't want to ask you to waste your time on it.
It will take me 5 or 6 minutes to know if it's going to be more time than what it's worth. So you should let me know what it
but
is.
But it was one of, you know that, Rhythm Kitchen.
Rhythm Kitchen.
I love that song.
You have made me, I recognize it, but I don't remember it.
I'm sure you'll remember 2 seconds in. It's funny because when I sang along to it in the car, and it's like, this is really simple. I'd like this for karaoke night. And there's an instrumental version, but it's missing all the backup vocals. And I realized the entire song is basically just spoken word. And so without backup, it's just me standing there saying, there's a lady in the kitchen and she's making chicken. I like weed. I'm going to drink tea with weed in it. And it's not actually much of a song. And I find it very interesting how when they produce it and put it together, it's beautiful. But if I sing over the instrumental version, it's missing more than half of the song.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Is this the Rare Americans?
Yeah.
This is a fucking really kind of cool sounding song, by the way. I like this.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Everyone should go listen to Rare Americans Rhythm Kitchen. Cool song.
I walk into the party, a mansion in the sky. It's a burning week. Oh, shit. I spilled water on my leg.
Oh no.
It doesn't rhyme. Thigh.
Thigh.
I spilled water on my thigh.
Cameron, we missed a week because I was on vacation and we don't have a topic. Should I talk about vacation?
I want to hear all about vacation. Vacation. All I want to hear about vacation. Lots of stories from Chad.
I love those lyrics because they're about me. And I've been drinking. Holy shit! I didn't. Overproof bourbon is very fun. So we went to Louisville, Kentucky.
I think there's
Kentucky.
A theme coming.
Yeah, there sure as fuck is. We went to Louisville, Kentucky, which is like the birthplace of bourbon. It's where a lot of the big distilleries are located. I say that, but then actually that's not true because when I think big distilleries, people are gonna be like, oh, we like Maker's Mark and Jameson and. Or not Jameson, Jack Daniels, and and Buffalo Trace, the ones I can find. It's like, no, okay, the big, smaller ones. Talking like Bardstown and Michter's and Old Forester and Evan Williams and Peerless and stuff like that. It was a long drive because, of course it was. I was really nervous. I don't like big cities, Cameron. I know I'll eventually come see you in San Diego, and one of my like nervous elements of that is going to a big city in California, because it's going to be a lot.
And yeah, you know, that's something that I've been trying to picture, is like when you guys come out here, I don't even know what that vacation is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't even know how much time you'll actually, like, you might not even go to San Diego that much.
Sure. I was concerned about Louisville, because Louisville's got like 600,000 people in it. It's a good size city. It's big. But it's bigger than St. Paul. It's bigger than Minneapolis, which I've been to both of those, and I'm like, shit, these cities are too big. I don't like this. But Louisville is really spread out. It's fucking huge. And so you get there, and there's a lot of one-way streets and a lot of businesses, but they're kind of far apart. There's, like, trees and stuff, and it kind of reminds me of, like, it's like, what if La Crosse were, like, 40 times bigger? But it has that vibe. Like, it's kind of a small city vibe that's just big. And so it's really inviting. It's really walkable. People were really nice. And we were on, like, kind of, like, Whiskey Road the whole time. So I only saw, like, maybe three blocks of Louisville, but what I saw was like really cool, and I was happy to be in a big city and like enjoy it. Like that was really special to me, even though we didn't see huge chunks of the city. One of the things we did that was fun was just be really kind of casual about where we ate. The first day we're there, we get in, we check in the hotel, and we ask the guy. It was like, hey, where's the restaurant around here that's cool that you would recommend? And he's like, oh, you walk like a couple blocks that way. There's a really good burger place. And we start walking over there, and we can't find the place. We're like, did we walk far enough? Like, it feels like it's been a couple blocks. And some guy behind us is like, hey, you lost. You look like you're looking for something. We're like, yeah, we're looking for this burger place. He's like, oh, it's just up ahead. But if you go one restaurant over, that's my restaurant. If you want barbecue, I make a really good barbecue. And I'm, you know, coming back. He's got some jugs of something he needed. And we're like, oh, I guess we're fucking eating barbecue tonight, because we ran into this dude who owns the restaurant. And that was the vibe the whole time we were there. You walk by a place, we're hungry. It's like, oh, it smells really good in there. Let's just go in there and see what it is. Or that's a cool sign. I want to go in that restaurant because it's got a cool sign. And it was so fucking fun, Cameron. Just like so little planned, so little like expectations other than it smells good. And I feel like that's what vacation...
Yeah, nothing in San Diego smells good.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. There's a lot of places in Louisville that smell good. There were some fucking awesome restaurants there. But I feel like we had such a just serendipitous, like, view of the city. It was so cool. It was so relaxed and chill. Like, it's like, oh, this is what vacation should be. We had a couple things planned, but when I say a couple, I mean, like, literally three the whole 4 days we were there. Well, we were probably there more like 3 days, because the fourth day we had to drive back. And those three things we had planned were just tours of distilleries. And then that was largely because we wanted to do tastings and see what fun stuff there was to be had. The first place we went when we got there at night, there was a liquor store really close that's huge. And it had a bar in the liquor store, so you could taste the things you were going to buy. And we walk in there. And Green River Distilling, which is a subsidiary of Bardstown, had a showing. They're doing a free tasting. You try any three of their like four or five products and then buy it from them. And the guy that, like, their master distiller was there to sign bottles. And so I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want a tasting of this. This is great. I cannot believe I haven't even been in the city an hour and I'm already like getting free bourbon, and I could just, you know, meet the guy that made it. He can sign the bottle. And they're like, okay, you should go in this order. Here's their normal. Here's our rye. And here's our, like, single barrel. I'm like, well, I want to try the single barrel first, because single barrel is usually great. So I have that. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And it kicks like a bastard. It is really overproof. It's 119. And I'm like, I got to buy the first thing I try. This is fun. And so it's like, okay, well, this is like $80. It's like, fine. We're on vacation. And that was, Cameron, that was the cheapest bottle I bought on vacation. The next day, we go to... Oh, okay. So then we go to the bar. And I'm told by someone at work, okay, you got to look for Bardstown stuff, because that's the best. That's my favorite. So I see a bunch of Bardstown options, and the cheapest is a $10 pour. I'm like, okay, I want that one. He's like, no, you want the bottled and bond, which is $12. I'm like, fine, I'll get that one. And it was really good. And I bought a bottle of that, but I gave it to my neighbor who took care of my cats. That was her gift for taking care of my pets. And I almost bought a bottle for me, but I thought, oh, I'll probably be able to find that around here. And I can't. And I'm really mad. I really wish I would have fucking bought a bottle of that for me. Joe gets a sample, a pour of like Stag Junior, which is $25 for an ounce. It's one of those like $800 bottles of beer or bourbon or $500 or whatever. It's really hard to find. It was not available in the store. I could not buy it anywhere in the city. And it was so good. It is like, oh my God, this is day one and I can't beat this. I cannot believe like what we're finding. And it was like the whole fucking weekend was kind of like that. It was so fucking fun. And I haven't been on like a proper vacation in like a couple years. And it was great. I've been talking for a while, so you should talk.
No, it's okay. You keep going.
Okay, so the next day, the first tour we have booked is Old Forester, which you should be able to find that. That's just pretty all over America. And the Old Forester Distillery, like they have a main plant that's outside the city that's really big. And then they have their plant inside the city that's basically built from the ground up to be a showroom and for tours. And it was definitely the best tour we went on. It was really cool. We got to get like really close to the giant vats of bourbon as they are being made and see everything. Just like the color choices of the place and like the route you got to take. You got to see them toast and char a barrel that they were going to use. Like someone was literally building a barrel while we were there. So you got to see that process and just built from the ground up to be a great showpiece. Then we go to have a tasting. I think they gave us four samples. They're not big pours. They're like half ounces. But it's and then a giant piece of chocolate, because chocolate and bourbon, good combo. It was really fucking good chocolate. And it was the best showroom, probably my least favorite product. I didn't buy anything, though. The Old Forester bottled and bond is good. If you can find that, that is worth a pickup. I did buy their coffee. Because they did have their own brand of like bourbon roasted coffee. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm here. I'm going to buy some coffee. After that, the second tour we went on was Peerless, which I've had a couple of their bottles. That stuff's really good. And they're like a lot smaller and a lot more like scrappy as far as like distilleries go. But the tour was really cool. We got to get pretty up and close with stuff. We got to see things. They had a cat in their distillery just walking around this little calico kitten named Rye, and she was adorable. I got to pet her, and that was very fun. It was my birthday that I got a free t-shirt. The guy giving us the tour was really cool. What? He looked like a fucking movie star. Like, you ever just, like, run into someone, you're like, Jesus Christ, that guy is hot. Like,
yeah, no, some people just kind of look different, don't
just,
they?
Just like, goddamn, you are an attractive dude.
Like, and, they carry a different vibe.
Yeah, he was really fun. He's talking us through the process, and we go for the tasting, and he poured us some decent sized like ounces of you know, things to try. And the Peerless stuff, their bourbon is really, really good. And so we have four samples of that, and I'm like, shit, this is great. One of the ones I saw in the storefront was their double oaked, and I was like, okay, that wasn't on the list. I was like, hey, can I buy a sample of this? I really want to try it because I might buy it. And he like looks around, he's like, I'm not supposed to do this, but, and he just like pours me a little bit. He's like, don't tell anybody. So now I'm on a podcast telling people. And I tried it, and I was like, I'm really glad you did this, because you just saved me $100. Because I was going to buy it, but I think one of the other ones I had was better. And so I bought that. And then Joe bought their rye double oaked, which is what I'm drinking right now. And it is fucking delicious. Cameron, this bourbon is like the same color as root beer. It is like black.
But and who makes this one?
Peerless. Peerless. You should be able to find their kind of normal and their regular rye. I think they're pretty everywhere. They're weird stuff. We got to try like the single barrels and the double oaked, and those are kind of only available at the distillery. And at that point, my goal was like, I want to find stuff I can only get in Kentucky. God, the tasting notes on this, because I just had some, by the way. I'm getting like, I feel like there's almost a root beer flavor in here. Like, there's kind of a, there's something in here that is really weird. There's a lot of vanilla. There's a bit of cinnamon. It is, It is an immaculate ride. It is so fucking good. So those are the big two tours we did. But we went to a bunch of other places to do tastings. Like, I walk into Bardstown because they have a small place there. I'm like, I gotta try some because my coworker is just adamant. And so I get sit down and I order a tasting of their Discovery series. It's 3 half-ounce pours, so 1.5 ounces total. It's $25, which is a lot of money for not a lot of product. But all three of them were very, very good. And I get a hold of her. I'm on vacation, but I'm able to, you know, communicate to her through someone I know at work. And I was like, hey, is there something you want? Because I asked you and you said no, but I'm asking you again now that I'm here. She's like, well, if they got number 11, I really want that. And I was like, I'm staring right at the bottle. $140. Do you want to buy it? Want me to buy it for you? And she's like, yes. Like, I grabbed that for her. And I really wish I would have got number 9 for me because it was really, really good. So I'm on the hunt for that now. But God, that place was cool. That was such a fucking classy looking place. Just the it was really like white. It was clean. There was a lot of like nice wood, structures, you know, the bar, the chairs, like it just looked next level. And I think the cheapest thing in that place was like $70. So that was great. The next day we go to Rabbit Hole, which is, I really love their stuff. I think when you were here, you might have actually got to try some Rabbit Hole. I think I might have had a bottle of that.
That sounds really familiar, yeah.
I think I had you try the High Gold, which I believe you liked. So we walk in there, and that place is the exact opposite. This is a, like, Walmart scrappy shithole of a distillery. Like the bar looks cheap. There's younger people running it. They're like, hey, you can do a tasting, but we gotta let things clear out. People are just here. It's kind of a mess. Like, it is not a good showroom. But their product, I've had a bunch of it. It's fantastic. And I'm like, okay, well, this is weird. And all their stuff, by the way, is really expensive. Like, the flasks and the little bourbon sipping glasses and the t-shirts. Like, it's all really premiumly priced. So I sit down, and I'm like, what's your flight? Like, well, this is our main line of flight. And I'm like, oh, I've had all of that. I want to try, what's your weird shit you got? I want to try a flight of your weird shit. Like, okay, that's these three. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to buy a flight for all my family because I haven't paid for enough this vacation and I want to do my part. So I buy a bunch of flights. My mom gets an old fashioned, which is made with $60 whiskey, which no, you would never make an old fashioned with whiskey that expensive. But when you're there. So I spend like $110 on three flights in an old fashioned. And I try these three bourbons that you can only get there in like half-size bottles. They're all really good. And I'm like, shit, I want this one, and I kind of want this one. And then my dad's like, I want to buy this one. And my brother's like, I want to buy this one. I'm like, fuck. I didn't like the middle one as much. I don't want to buy that one. So I'm walking around, and they got this glass cabinet, Cameron. And behind it is like, these bottles are fucking gorgeous. They got all this amazing, cool artwork on them. And I'm like, shit, these are cool. They're $150 or more, but they're really cool. So I go back up, I'm like, hey, that one that says Tempest on it, can I get a pour of that? How much does that cost? He's like, I can give you a half ounce for $10. I'm like, well, I've already spent over $100. I might as well do it. And I try it. And it is legitimately the best thing I've had all weekend. Like, all the whole trip. I'm like, oh my fucking God, this stuff is good. Just the smell alone. Like, it smells like, if you had like a bourbon candle, but also it had like cherry and cinnamon and vanilla and nutmeg and all this other, like, you know, these little like fun bourbony flavors that you always get in these high-end bottles. I'm sorry I'm talking so much. I'm kind of drunk.
No, it's fun.
And so I'm like, I hand this to my brother because I have something like, Joe, you have to try this right the fuck now. And he smells it. He's like, are you gonna buy this? Because if you're not, I'm gonna buy this. He hasn't even tried it yet. He just smelled it. I was like, I'm gonna buy this. And he tastes it. He's like, holy shit, this is good. And so I'm like, I need this. It's behind the cabinet. You need to unlock the cabinet and give me this right the fuck now. So, you know, this like lady that looks younger than me, because like I said, this is a scrappy looking bar. And I'm like finding the best product of the weekend there. And I'm like, you know, you judge a book by its cover. I do that. Everybody judges books by their cover. It's why the covers fucking matter and you get marketing involved and you have a graphic designer. But there are times when you should not judge a book by its cover. This was definitely one of them. So I get that. And at this point, these are the this is the bottles I've got. I got a bottle of Peerless, I got a bottle of Rabbit Hole, and I got a bottle of the Green River the first day. And we do a bit more touring, and you know, we try some more stuff, and it's really fun. We go to a Godsmack concert on Saturday. We saw them at a really small venue of like 3,000 people, this really old place that's set up like a like you'd go see a Shakespeare play. So the acoustics were really cool. And that was fucking dope. And it was a great weekend. And I think that's... Oh, we toured the Louisville Slugger Museum and their factory where they make baseball bats. That was neat. I kept asking questions about things that she doesn't normally get questions about, the tour guide. She's like, do you work at a factory and are you like a manager? I'm like, yeah. So can I see your maintenance department? And she's like, no. I was like, God damn it. I would love to do that. That was fun. And my big takeaway, other than Louisville is awesome and I want to go back like 2 years from now, I want this to be somewhat like semi-regular just so I can keep trying new stuff, because all the single barrel stuff is going to taste different. That's what single barrel means. Like, it embodies the flavors of the wood, and the barrels are always made differently. They don't like have a recipe for wood. They just use whatever wood's fucking available. So if you get like wood from Minnesota or wood from Tennessee or wood from California, it all is going to like taste a little different because it's slightly different kinds of wood and it's a different environment, different temperatures and humidities, which is why like the bottle of Peerless I have has tasting notes of sugar cookie and marmalade for whatever fucking reason, but it's awesome. But the big takeaway is that like my concept of what a good whiskey is like drastically changed. And what I'm willing to pay for a good whiskey is also drastically changed to the point where I'm a little concerned.
You've expanded your palate.
I have. And I'm like, oh shit, like $60 is affordable. Like where before I'm like $35 is what I would prefer to pay. And I'm like, God, you know, the barrel craft at $84 is like, that's a really good price for what you get. Like, I could just buy that more often. I hate that I'm so money oriented, but like it does keep SpongeBob's pants square. Like you can't ignore it.
Well, when are you gonna come to San Diego and be bored to death?
When do you want me to come to San Diego and be bored to death?
I mean, never.
I don't know.
I'd rather you have a good time on vacation.
I would love to go to San Diego with you and hang out and do what we did and just like be really scrappy and weird and just like visit places that might be cool. Like, I was kind of nervous when you came over, and I've told you this because like, oh, there's only so much to do in La Crosse. But we had a really good time. And I enjoyed our vacation a lot. And that's, you know, that's all I want. Like, I don't need to see, like, the bulk of San Diego. I don't even know if I'd want to. It's like, hey, what's a cool place? What's a cool restaurant? What's a neat microbrewery we could go try?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, a lot of our good restaurants are closed.
Oh. Well, what about the ones that are like, open?
I don't know, man.
I mean, we could go to, I don't know, McDonald's or Applebee's. Talked about Applebee's last time.
You can
go to
the zoo. The zoo is nice.
It's up to you. You know, you know, as far as like that dance goes, you definitely get to lead. I would be happy to go visit you. I know Joe would be happy. We could, obviously not maybe this year, but you know, if we wanted to try that in 2025, I keep floating the comics podcast crew to come here, especially with Emily moving to St. Paul. I don't know when that'll happen, but I would hope it will at some point. That's another one. They're like, oh, I'm getting Alex to get like a visa to come to, or not a visa, passport or whatever he needs to come from Canada to the United States to visit fucking La Crosse. Like, that's so weird. Like, there's not that much to do here. And so we have to do everything that's on offer, which is like all the things to do here. And then we're out of shit to do. But the real fun is just kind of hanging out and maybe watching a movie or two and having some drinks and playing Smash Brothers, you know, like. Vacation is really what you make of it and, like, your expectations, right? Like, that's why I think when people go to Disney World and they're miserable because they have this itinerary of 10 things they have to do and everything costs $400 because it's fucking Disney World. And they're just like, this sucked and my kids were crying the whole time because it was lines and it was horrible. And it's like, I don't know. We went to Louisville with literally no expectations other than get drunk, and it was fucking rad. And maybe that's what it should be.
Man, did you ever see that movie where it was about going to Disneyland and it was like how like evil Disneyland is?
Mm-mm.
It's not even like a bad movie worth watching. I think, who is it? Jenny Nicholson did a really good video about it.
Oh.
I recommend you watch that.
Okay. Okay. It was fun to feel kind of like, I don't know, opulent for a few days as well. And I know that's kind of like a big draw on vacation is we're like, hey, we're on vacation. There's no real rules. Let's not stress about certain things. You know, let's go to the concert. Let's go to the nice restaurant. I get you have to like come down off of that high and get back into the real world. But like being there for 3 or 4 days is really refreshing and not worrying about work. I did tell like a couple of my coworkers, like, hey, if something goes fucking tits up, you need to call me. Like, absolutely. I like you guys and I respect you and I want to help. Feel free. And I got one text about like, hey, where's this PowerPoint located? You know, kind of thing. But it was evidently things went well when I was gone, which is good.
That's good.
But one of the cool things too, coming back, is I got all this bourbon. So I go to Chris, who's been like my liaison, you know, she brings me samples, she tells me things to look for, and I'm like, I got stuff for her now and her husband. And I was mixing up the bottles, you know, last night, you know, pouring them and labeling them, because she gave me these little 2 ounce medicine bottles, and giving those to her today was really fun. I'm just like, hey, I got 4 things you get to try, you and your husband, and you know, I can't wait to come in on Monday and hear what you think about them. And That kind of like weird hobby relationship like that I'm forming with her or have formed with her is really special. Like, I really value that. It's so cool.
So if you had to put it on a scale, how heavy is Louisville?
How heavy is Louisville? I bet Louisville is really heavy. There's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of roads. Have you ever thought about that? You're driving along like an interstate and you're just like, how much fucking concrete is this interstate?
So actually, yeah, this is actually a thing I've thought about before with like Godzilla movies, where it's like, if Godzilla were to like stomp on a city, would he just like fall through into like the like stuff under the roads? What's the weight limit of these roads?
That's a good question. The physics of Godzilla. Also, like, the monetary value to the damage Godzilla does. Because it's not like he's just destroying, like, giant buildings. Like, he's like, plowing through small businesses. You know, every step is, like, major destruction. He's fucking up cars. Like, the insurance claims when Godzilla stomps through a city. And I think this kind of gets brought up with, like, superhero stuff, too. Like, Superman fights Zod, and he fucks up half the city, killing Zod, and turning him into a vinyl he can throw into space. Like, normal people gotta recover from that. People's commutes the next day are now ruined because of Superman. You think he feels bad?
I mean, I think it depends on the writer on both of those fronts.
That's true.
I think it's one of those things where, to me, sometimes the reality of some of the stuff, like the logistics of weird superpowers, can be interesting. And there's other times where overthinking stuff becomes not fun anymore. And you have to draw that line somewhere.
Yeah. I've definitely read like comic books where the overthinking is the point. I think Astro City was one of those. I cannot fucking remember who writes Astro City. It's not that important. But I do like the idea of like kind of the deconstruction of the superhero fight. Where, you know, you're reading a Marvel comic and you're like, this is fun. The Hulk is fighting Iron Man. And then it's like, yeah, but, you know, the person who works in that coffee shop that the Hulk kind of destroyed, like, she's technically out of a job now till the coffee shop's restored. What does she do? And, you know, the weird collateral damage. Like, there is something fun there. But when I'm reading the Hulk, I don't know if I want to think about that because that's not why I'm there.
I wish I had something interesting to contribute.
I know. I also feel bad that I basically talked for like 25 minutes straight, and I'm just like, oh, I'm out of things now. What do I do?
Well, that's not your fault. I've had kind of a week, and I think I'm just now realizing that I'm still like decompressing a bit. Oh. So I apologize for not being at my best.
That's okay. I'm just happy to talk to you. It's been a little bit, right? Like, what's been kind of fun.
Well, yeah.
I got back and I'm like, oh, I hope this week goes well. My boss was out because he had to get a hernia surgery. And so I've had I don't want to say it was a chill week because there's a lot of shit to do. But that kind of like inkling of like shit could go get really fucked up and I don't know and I'm not aware of it like was gone. And so it was actually a really pleasant week back. And again, I feel like I was really productive and we had some good meetings and good things done. And it's like, it was a good week. Also, I've had really, really good bourbon to drink every night. Dry April is going to be really hard this year.
Drapel.
Yeah.
Drapel.
What sucks is April 2nd, I get to go to a concert. I haven't bought tickets yet, but I'm going to do that soon. And like one of my favorite things about going to concerts in La Crosse is the drinks are affordable and they give you a pretty good pour. Like it's like $7. You get like a double of, you know, Jack or Jameson. So you can get pretty loopy at a concert in La Crosse for not a lot of money. And I'm supposed to be sober that month. And it's like, oh, I'll do a dry April 1st. And then I'll get fucked up on April 2nd, and then I guess I'll try to do the rest of the month dry. It just feels a little not in the spirit of the thing. But if I go see Breaking Benjamin and Daughtry, like, I don't want to be sober for that. That's a party.
I think all that I've done these past 2 weeks is play Helldivers.
How do you like Helldivers?
I like Helldivers a lot. There's things about it. Like I like to think about game design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I mentioned this before, but it's like when you look at it, if you just watch the trailer, you know, it seems kind of generic. Like there's not anything special going on. And so I find it interesting that so many people are going on so hard about it, you know?
Sure.
But it's the little details that I think really help a lot. And there was an interesting interview with the director where apparently a lot of the design choices came from his experience playing like tabletop games.
Oh.
And it's stuff that I'm very tired of these like major studio video games where it feels like all the decisions are made in a lab and they don't, you know, experiment or they don't try to like make sure things feel fun. It feels like constructed in a way to intentionally get your attention or something.
Sure.
So one of the things that he pointed out is how there's friendly fire. And I don't remember the last time a game has had friendly fire.
It does feel like it's been a bit.
Where you can just like one shot somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse me. But also, like, you'll just find things sometimes. And the game doesn't necessarily tell you how to do it. You know, there's a tutorial that gives you enough understanding of the game and all the basics. But really, like, when you have a mission, it's kind of like, okay, you have to destroy the eggs. And so you land and it's kind of like, it's on you to figure out how to find the eggs. You know, it's like you have to know how to read your map and how to get there and what is or isn't important. And when you find stuff like a new weapon, it doesn't tell you how to use the weapon. And so you might like charge it up or whatever, or you realize, oh, you can overclock this laser gun. And so you turn off safety mode and you charge it all the way. So you hit the tank and then it charges all the way and explodes and kills you.
Ah.
And you go, oh, you can't charge it all the way. Don't turn off safety mode, guys. And it's stuff like that where it just kind of, like, you know, it feels different than these other games that have to, like, stop and give you a screen that, like, holds your hand and explains everything to you. Like, I don't know if you caught any of that debate the other week or so about all the, like, yellow paint.
No, I did not.
There's a trend in these modern games lately where whenever you find like a puzzle, as soon as you walk up to the puzzle, it's like it doesn't even give you time to try and solve it. It's just the character will like narrate, like, huh, that lever over there, I bet I can throw my axe at it. Because they had enough playtesters that were too brain dead to like play the game and experiment and try to figure it out.
Sure. I will say, there. I don't know how death and like lives and stuff are treated in Helldivers. Like, it's fun. It's like, oh, I learned a thing and it killed me, but I know not to do that again. Can be fun unless there's like proper ass consequences for that. And then it's annoying. And so there is definitely a balance. I don't know how this game falls on that because I've never played it.
Yeah. So when you, the way it works is if you play a game, let's say you're 4-player squad, you drop into the map, you kind of have 20 lives.
Okay.
So if you die, you can just call back right away.
A lot of lives.
And then after those 20, they also slowly refresh. So technically there's more than 20.
Okay.
I feel like it's reasonable. And so what's fun is like, you know, something bad might happen and it's like, oops, now we know. And you can laugh about it. So here's a screenshot from Resident Evil 4.
He's pointing a gun at a barrel. And that barrel could explode or it could fall apart. You don't know.
Here is some screenshots from the HD remake of Resident Evil 4.
Oh, they all got yellow paint on them. I can't tell if that means to go near them or stay away, though, is the thing. Typically, yellow is caution.
Well, I think the thing is it draws your attention.
It sure does.
Because it breaks up the visual, and now you see it.
Yeah. You definitely know to go do something to it.
It's never executed in a way that's remotely, what's the word? It breaks up the visual design of the game. Is the debate.
Okay, so the yellow ladder actually upsets me more.
Also, in Final Fantasy VII, when you're climbing up the wall, there's yellow paint on these ledges.
What the fuck? Oh my god. I never knew this was a thing.
Yeah, you can find a lot of these examples, because it's gotten to a point where this just became the default, like, okay, some of the playtesters got stuck because they couldn't find this thing. So it's like, okay, we'll just put yellow on it. And then if they have time, they might go back and do something more clever, but they never have time.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I think it was the New Horizon game. Let me see, Climbing Edge. Horizon Forbidden West. I was kind of curious about that game. And I had a PS5, and it's like, well, this looks really pretty. I think I might get it. And I thought I might watch some videos and reviews and stuff to see. And I think it was like there was a Donkey video. And Donkey always makes jokes, and he's kind of like, he'll jab and stuff. And so it wasn't so much like I'm looking for his review, but I wanted to see stuff that he does highlight. And so I click on his video, and the first frame, he didn't even say anything yet, and he wasn't even drawing attention to it. The first frame, in the distance, I could see the yellow paint climbing rock lines.
Mm.
And I just sort of stopped the video, and it's like, yeah, I don't want this. Like, it's so lazy that it's like, okay, it's one of these games where if they're not interested in making an interactive experience, then I think that represents the rest of the design. Because what they're going to do is every puzzle, Aloy is going to stand there and go, wait a minute, I bet I can shoot that with my bow. That rope looks weak from here. I bet I can shoot it.
Right.
And it's like, I'm just going through the motions while the game tells me what to do. And I'm kind of sick of it. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I'm really enjoying Helldivers is like, when stuff happens, it's like there's consequences. And so you have trial and error. So sometimes, you know, you'll see something and it's like, I know like Joe is complaining about an enemy where it's like this big tanky armored bug that runs around and it looks like it has a weak point on the back. So you're always trying to shoot at its back, but it just has so much health. But then somebody will hit the front with a rocket and it chips off some of the armor. And if you shoot the exposed leg, that kills it a lot faster. And it's like, I never would have figured that out without trial and error.
Right.
But now that I know, and I see it, and I see other people doing the wrong strategy, and it's like, no, guys, do this. And I can show them, and we all take it down right away. It's like this became this moment where we all like came together, and now we know. There's something else, too, I like. It's like each mission, there's usually a goal. So your mission is to complete an objective, and then you have to evacuate. And so if you complete the mission, but then everyone dies, you technically still count as completing the mission. Like, you don't get your bonus points for how many people evacuated, but it's also like mission accomplished. You know, it's a shame no one came back, but we stopped the radar dish. And that's kind of funny. But there's also a timer. And what I found with the timer was, I thought if you ran out of time, then like that's game over. Because that's just how timers and games work. But what actually happens is, like, you have a Star Destroyer, and that's where you call down your reinforcements. That's where you call down your airstrikes, your extra supplies. Basically, what happens is, at the end of the timer, it's like, yeah, the Star Destroyer is out of orbit. We can't help you now. You're on your own.
Oh, okay.
And so now they send one last evac ship. So if you can't get on the evac when you get over there, then it's game over. But you don't have any support. So no more revives, no more airstrikes. And it's like, it doesn't feel like, oh, no, you lost. It's more like, okay, this took longer than we wanted it to, but we're better than this. Come on, everybody. We rally together and we tough through it. And it turns into this heroic moment. It's not a failure. It's like, okay, we shouldn't have come out of that alive, and we all did. We all high five and go into the shop and buy a high five emote to celebrate.
So what it sounds like to me, outside looking in, is that there's almost like a, I don't want to say it like Dungeons and Dragons style view of this game, where the wow, I had like this great thing I was gonna say in my head, and then I opened my mouth and it just like it was like turning the faucet on and it just went away. The role playing, the storytelling aspect as you play is really important. It's not just like a gameplay element where you're like, hey, we're going to kill bugs, and this is the best DPS you can do with this gun, and this is the strategy on this boss or this bug, and this is the, I'm going to save my grenades for this because that's what you do on this encounter. It's like there's a story to every time you play where it's going to be a little different, and as you learn the game more, you get to tell other people about the story because you've played it, but it's always a little random. And so I get why you would really like that, right? Because you do a lot of that kind of like, you know, Space Station 13, where you know something's fucked up's going to happen, but you don't exactly know what.
Yeah. And actually, there's an update last night. I'll explain this other part in a minute, but one of the things they added is now there's weather hazards.
Oh, no.
So, like, you're on a desert planet, and in the distance, you could sometimes see these storms. But now they might get a little bit closer, and now you have a flaming tornado.
My favorite kind.
We were doing this one mission, and we had to blow up a robot factory. And it was just two of us, and we're sneaking in, and it's like, okay, we're almost there, and we're scouting out. And my friend over in Germany, she's like, she's got her sniper rifle out. And she's like, okay, we got like way too many over there. I don't know how the two of us are going to take out all of it. So I'm thinking, okay, if I call in an airstrike on this side, and maybe if I can draw more attention that side, can you pick off the things when the heavy arms turn away? Can you shoot the backpacks and try and detonate at least the heavy guys without being seen? And we're trying to strategize a bit. And then all of a sudden, a meteor comes down and hits the base that we have to blow up. And explodes it. And it says, mission accomplished.
Hell yeah.
And the two of us are speechless. And I'm like just watching this. I'm going like, oh, I guess a meteor hit it. And she's laughing like, okay, I guess we can just evacuate now. And I turn around and I look up in the sky. And there's a lot more meteors coming
oh, no.
right towards our area. And it's like, oh, this kind of changed the parameters of the mission a bit. And it turned into this hectic thing where now we had to, like, dive out of the way of meteors crashing. But that also put us in vision of the turrets. They have these, like, massive cannons that will kill you in one shot from across the map that we were, like, stealthing around. So now that we had to, like, run out of cover because of the meteors, now we're suddenly getting shot at by these, like, Star Wars turrets. And they're calling in, like, airdrops of extra robots to hunt us down while there's still meteors coming. And it was this entirely different adventure than what we signed up for.
Sure.
But the other part, the way you pick levels, too, each world or each map you play is basically a planet on the map.
Okay.
And I thought this was just a cute UI thing. And it's kind of neat, too, because when the host is there, like, this is a table that's on the bridge of your Star Destroyer. But it's actually, like, represented in 3D space in the game. So you could, like, walk up behind the host of the match, and while he's navigating the menu, you see where he's at on the menu, and he's, like, picking the missions and stuff, and it's kind of cool how it's all handled in real time. But I just thought it was, like, a cute way to, like, kind of display it. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was looking at the game on Steam real quick, because I'm just like, how much is this game?
It's $30 right now with a coupon.
It sounds fun. Like, it has... I'm hearing different things about it, because obviously Joe's been playing it, and he's a little more critical, but he's also, I feel like, has a slightly different view of what he wants out of game design. Whereas I'm looking at this like I would look at Space Station 13, and where it's like, oh, shit's about to get fucked, and I don't understand or know why, but I have a gun, so at least that's better, and, you know, I'm not a clown, so we're better off than normal, you know. That I feel like that's more of the vibe I'm getting out of this game from you.
Yeah. So with the map here, I thought it was just a cute way to, like, kind of show what levels you can pick. But each of those, it actually is like a game of Risk.
Okay.
Where when you complete missions, it actually, like, increases, like, how much democracy you've enforced onto the planet.
Ah.
So, like, when you finish a mission, like this one here, it's like the Orion Sector is 81.40177% liberated. And so you'll finish a mission, it'll go up to 81.40178% liberated, and we'll all cheer.
Nice.
But it's like you'll get these objectives where it's like, oh, we have to take this planet, because if we save this planet, we get access to our mech factories, and we can actually call in, like, mechs, like these, like, 40k robots we write, and we can just call those into missions if we get this planet. So everybody starts rallying to this planet, and it's really cool because there's actually a guy at the company who is, like, the DM, and he is overseeing this table and, like, reinforcing the enemies and setting up these encounters. And it's actually, like, a massive scale game, the same way that, like, 40K would be.
Okay.
And it's like, what a fun concept. Like, this is all I've ever wanted out of a game ever since I found out about playing games on the internet. It's like, wait, you could have more than two people playing a game at once? Like, why can't we just have a million people all playing at once?
Yeah.
And so this is finally that, like, actualization that I've been waiting for.
I remember having that kind of thought when I started playing Unreal Tournament 2004. This is probably 2006 when I started playing that game. I was late to show up, but Onslaught mode was, I want to say, like, 32 on 32 or 16 on 16. It was a large group versus a large group, bigger than I had ever seen in any kind of game ever. And, you know, getting in these giant maps, and there's all these bases and these weapon racks, and there's vehicles to get around faster. And it just kind of blew my mind at the scope, where it's like, wait, this isn't illegal. Like, I can just do this. I can, like, play a game with 32 other people, and we're all divided up, and we got to go destroy each other's base, but we have to take these mini bases first and push them back and, or defend, because we're getting fucked. And look at all these vehicles. Oh, God, there's like 12 tanks, really? Why is there so many tanks? But I can drive one. It's one for me. And you know, that like kind of just elation and ecstasy is like the scope of video games gets bigger and bigger.
When it's done right, you feel that scope.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But yeah, it's those little moments that really polish it out. Because objectively, it's like there's kind of not that much to the game. Like, it's very basic. You just sort of like you go on a planet and there's a bunch of bugs, so you shoot them.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a $40 game because it's basically just the Horde mode from Gears of War. Like, in a vacuum, I kind of understand why Sony didn't support this more.
Hmm.
But when you actually get your hands on and have fun with it, it's like, man, this is a lot better than Foam Stars.
Sure. Foam Stars? What's that?
Are you familiar with Foam Stars?
I am not.
Oh, boy. Sony has been pushing this game Foam Stars for, like, nearly a year.
Well, they did a good job, because I don't fucking know anything about it.
I'm not exaggerating. It was literally just a very pathetic attempt to get the Splatoon audience. And it came out the same day as Helldivers. And I'm pretty sure half the server capacity went to Foam Stars and half of it went to Helldivers. Like, that's a silly way of putting it. I know it was more complicated than that. But it's like, when Helldivers came out and it was so popular that no one could log in, I was looking at the Foam Stars servers. And it's like, well, there's no line over here. Come on, guys. Why don't we play Foam Stars instead?
Foam Stars looks like it was designed by someone who watched 3 K-pop music videos. And was like, I get it.
Yeah. I don't know who this is for. And I was not able to find a single person playing this game. Like, I could not find anyone on Twitch. I could not find any YouTube videos, like, reviewing it. And Sony was, like, pushing it because PlayStation has had this mission to do Fortnite. Because I think they found out how much money Fortnite makes. And they're like, well, we could do that.
I get the...
So it's just kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, the Splatoon meets Fortnite. You know what sucks is, like, I kind of... There's a vibe to this that's kind of cool, but it also feels really shameless.
Yeah.
Like... This is derivative in a bad way.
And they also, even though it came out the same day, they also made it free if you have PlayStation Plus, which you need for online play.
Oh.
So, technically, you could get a free copy the first month. And so, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, yeah, I may as well since it's here. So, I click, you know, add to library. So, I have it in my library. Like, I own this game. I have not booted it up once. I've not installed it. The servers might shut down before I get around to checking it out.
I love how the top comment on this is, you're a kid now, you're a squid now, you're a human now.
How do you get around that?
Wow,
it's very blatant.
Yeah, I like the part when the Foam Star said it's foaming time, then foamed all over the city. The We Have Splatoon at Home edition. This game looks like a gym that will have its server shut down in 2 years.
Did you see that Final Fantasy VII Battle Royale?
No, that sounds interesting. Well, wait, does it though?
I think the servers were live for like exactly 33 days. And no one was playing, so they just kind of like unplugged it and no one noticed.
The Side Order DLC is really changing the Splatoon lore. I feel like they should have called it Cum Stars. I don't know if it would sell any more copies, but at least people would have talked about it.
Well, you didn't hear about it. And if PlayStation said next spring, get Cum Stars, you probably would have heard about it.
Exactly.
Well, I talked enough about Helldivers. I have been really enjoying it, though. Do we have a glad space?
Yeah, I think so. You know what's fucking cool? Is
Foam Stars.
Foam Stars. Judas Priest put out a new album today. And, like, the people in that band are in their 70s. And It's a pretty solid fucking like old school heavy metal album. Like I listened to it today at work and it was pretty good. And I love that like 72-year-old Rob Halford just still kind of like kicks ass. I would say go check out the new Judas Priest album. It's honestly pretty good. I had a lot of fun listening to it. I should probably tell you what it's called. Judas Priest, Invincible Shield. Want to listen to some people aging well and staying in good shape in their 70s. What about you? You got anything that made you glad this week?
I feel like it'd be cheating to tell a funny Helldiver story.
I mean, I won't stop you.
I had a funny Helldiver story.
Go on.
No, I guess that's it.
Hey!
That's funny. You had to be there. No, it was... So I like using the flamethrower.
Yes.
I might have mentioned already that this game has friendly fire.
Oh boy.
So anyways, I'm mindful. I pay attention to that stuff. So I have a very trusty revolver, and when there's a swarm of enemies, I'm using my flamethrower, and then when someone calls for help, I swap to my revolver, and I'm like, pop, 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 and I help get them away from the bugs, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I normally do. I was playing, and I got one of the airstrike things you can call in. For some reason, I feel like it was tuned wrong. Because it's like a series of bombs, but the spread is so wide that it's almost impossible to like call it in far enough away that it won't also hit you. And I don't think it's supposed to be a suicide bomb thing. I think it's just like, I think something's wrong with the math, because they actually did adjust it in a patch and it works better.
Okay.
But I was curious, where it's like, it can't be as bad as people are saying. And so I used that and I blew myself up. And that meant that I dropped my equipment. So then I was playing with somebody else who was new, and they're like, oh, I'll get your flamethrower. And like, okay, yeah, just use it. I don't care. And so, okay. I think he killed the rest of, like, I think he got, I want to say over 10 team kills with the flamethrower.
Oh no, that's a lot.
Because I kept saying this, but like, you can dive and that will put out the fire. Because it'll set your cape on fire and you just stay on fire until you like dive and roll around. So if you do catch on fire, you got to stop, drop and roll. But people weren't doing that. And this is the hazard of playing like with random people on PlayStation, is some of them are stupid.
Mm.
And it was one of these things where it's like, I understand why people don't pick this, because if you aren't careful, you just kind of see this weird chaotic thing go on all the time.
You know, there's something fun about the chaos, though. I might have to pick this up. I don't think I'll pick it up from, because you sent me this like Wario 64. Pick it up on Fantastical with code. Like, I want it on Steam, unless this code works on Steam.
What? Yeah, that's a Steam code.
Oh, okay. How long good is this for? Because I'll be honest, it's been a very expensive 2 months, Cameron. I did work on my house and I went on vacation.
Oh, no pressure. I was just letting you know.
Okay, I'm tempted to try this though, because it sounds fun. I believe my computer can run it.
You don't share games with Joe?
What do you mean?
Like you do the family share and you can like share your library.
Oh no, we don't do that.
That's gay.
But I'm gonna keep my eye on this one though, because like I've heard enough good things, and I feel like they have outweighed the bad things I've heard. And also, playing video games with you is fun. You know what's been cool? This week, and this is almost a glad business, I played Halo with Jean-Luc and Alex for like an hour. And that was just a good time. Like, you know, there's no elaborate story there. We just,
oh, that's a good glad space.
Fucking played Halo and it was great.
The time spent with friends is always the best glad space to have.
Yeah, I think so too.
You want to consciously take note of those times, because they're important. And sometimes we take them for granted.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. My cats are scratching at my door, which I believe is cat language for fucking feed us, we're hungry. We were drinking tonight, I grabbed the catnip and I poured a line out for Ripley. And holy shit, did he get fucking stoned. It's funny that I can get my pets high.
Aminals are like little people, except they're animals.
I threw a box at the door to try and get them to stop scratching at it. I think the microphone might have picked it up. I'm going to leave that in.
Okay, are we still recording?
Yeah, should I stop?
What are we recording?
I don't know.
We're recording Opinions Are Cheap with Cameron and Chad.
Oh my god, we forgot. We're at an hour and 11.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. I love you.